FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's May 18th, 2018. As always, we implore you to join the discussion, join the dialogue. That means email me at kl@carrielutz.com. Best part of my day is looking at your emails in my inbox in the morning. So, economy, what is going on now? Unemployment, can it possibly get better? Are we living in the best of all possible worlds? Well, maybe and maybe not. Workforce participation rate, all of these numbers, unemployment claims. When it comes to analyzing the stats, we always go to Andrew Zatlin. Andrew, you run MoneyballEconomics.com, and welcome back.
Thanks, Kerry. And you know what? I'm excited about today. You know how they used to say, it's Frank Sinatra's world, we just live in it. I'm going to say it's Donald Trump's world, and we're just living in it. We are deep, deep in a Donald Trump economy, and it's working. It's really going well.
And he did it his way, right?
And he did it his way, man. I don't know. Does he have blue eyes? I don't think so.
No.
You can't call him old blue. Old orange hair.
Some of them call him Cheeto Lay or something like that for his orange face, but who knows?
You know, we have to say this. All right. This is now fact. This economy, a little bit more than a year and a half into the Donald's presidency, it is undeniable that our economic strength is due to his policies. Now, a little flashback. Mm-hmm. Back in September 2016 and October, I'm sitting on earnings calls listening to what the grand poobahs of industry are saying. And they were saying, look, if things don't change, we're going to start layoffs. We were literally facing a recession with the next president. Trump got elected, which is different from what these industrial champions were thinking. Now, all of a sudden, you listen to earnings calls like today, Deere came out. They're raising. Everyone's saying this is a wonderful economy. We dig the policies. We're putting money into everybody's pockets. We are now leading and confronting protectionism around the world. We are an economic leader again. And that's kind of the framework for anything we want to talk economics right now, is we have a businessman in charge who is delivering the goods in an economic fashion. And all we can talk about are what are some of the gotchas there, you know, as we build a wall of worry. And I think that's kind of maybe we could talk about some of those gotchas.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and before we continue on, I'm looking at a bunch of pictures. His eyes are kind of grayish blue. I never noticed the color before. Kind of a dark blue, light, kind of grayish color. So for future reference, maybe his old blue eyes reincarnated.
Maybe he's new blue eyes.
Yeah,
we'll call him new blue eyes.
New blue eyes. And yeah, so what of it? Where are we now?
Well, I think we have to be very careful looking at the quote unquote conventional macroeconomic data points, the things you read in the Wall Street Journal, elsewhere, you know, you read in the popular press, this is happening, that's happening. Let me start with retail, which came out last week. And that came out following a pretty solid payroll number. Now, the payroll number always has a little bit of weirdness in it. It had some weirdness in it. It was lower because of some silly shortfall in one area. There's always something, right? But in general, payrolls are doing great. Unemployment claims, holy cow. Not only are they historically low, the number of people who are continuing claims low. And then, you know, we've got all these people who are falling off the food stamp program. I mean, we have a strong, tight labor market, and that's because we have a stronger industrial base, again, thanks to Trump. But just in general, it's morning in America again. Remember the great Ronald Reagan kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so retail's interesting because like every other data point out there, like the one I mentioned, payroll, it's kind of funky. Actually, it's not kind of funky. It's very funky in the way they put it together. I don't want to drill into the methodologies and how bad or good it is, but let me point this out. Every month we get this number that says it's supposed to be a snapshot of consumer spending. What are people buying in stores? Well, let's check in with stores, and that's the retail number. But here's the big secret. It only looks at things that are bought. Things.
Mm.
But that's not our economy. Our economy is a service economy. So you won't find, for example, air travel, gambling. You won't find spending on concerts, movies. Basically, you won't find it telling you anything about that discretionary type of spend. There's only one area where it touches on it, and that's the food and dining level, you know, because you had to go out and get your beer. Now, why is this important? Well, I'm going to throw something out there. I think we are in an economy now where people are spending more on short-term gratification than they are on things. I mean, Carrie, let's talk about the iPhone. When was the last time the iPhone had anything net new? You know, oh, it's got a better camera. You know, big deal.
I'd say when two generations ago, you know.
It's been years. All right, so same thing with cars, you know, same. What we're seeing is market saturation in goods. Everyone's got a flat panel TV, a tablet. We have all the stuff we're going to buy, the things, you know. George Carlin, we've got plenty of stuff now. Well, the challenge then becomes we still have money flowing in. We have the stuff. So now you're starting to see, well, how do I, you know, if I'm a manufacturer, how do I get people to replace that stuff, to obsolete it and, you know, replace it? So you're going to see some unnatural acts as, for example, the auto companies try to, you know, right now they're at 17 million cars plus or minus per year. They got to do something. It's grow or die. So they're going to try to find some way to get you to throw away your 3-year-old car, you know, and so on and so forth. Against that background, then, if people
electric
are
cars,
spending,
yeah. What about electric vehicles, EVs?
Oh, right. What do you think this whole move to automatic, you know, self-driving cars is all about? Because the writing is on the wall. They know. I mean, there's a reason why autos on the road was the average age on something like 10 years old. It's because they still work just fine. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not getting that much more incremental gain in quality in miles per gallon or in electronics. It's really not. You know, they're lasting longer. This isn't a function of affordability. It's a function of you guys finally got better cars on the road. Oh, so well, unfortunately, in the grow or die thing, they've got to obsolete it. So you're getting electric cars and okay. And there's an argument there. You know, it's maybe there's more fuel efficiency. Maybe it's more worthwhile. But the auto drive thing, I'm sorry, we don't really need that. But we're going to get it anyway through massive subsidies and spending, because how else do you get people to replace their cars? What's the next gimmick, right?
Well,
every year we have these new gimmicks.
I would take issue with you. We need autonomous vehicles here in Florida yesterday.
No, you need good drivers. Yesterday.
Well, we're not getting them. We're not getting them.
You need good drivers.
Exactly. So I'll settle for an autonomous vehicle compared to some 80-year-old lady who can't see over the steering wheel, who cuts across.
Hey, that's my mom.
I know. And she cuts across three lanes of traffic and hangs an illegal U-turn to go drive into Publix to buy a gallon of milk and risks, you know, everybody on the highway. No one is safe when your mother is on the highway here, Andrew. I'm telling you no one.
What are you, the pitch man for Florida's tourism? Come down to Florida, drive with the old ladies. Defensive driving, it's better than Mario Andrade. Hey. Right, well, anyway, so retail spending is shifting in terms of the mix. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to know what people are spending on, guess what? It just so happens that I track that. I track
experiences. That's called experiential expenditures.
Exactly.
In the Lutz London School of Economics, where we teach this. You don't buy things, you buy experiences. It's like you go on a safari to Africa, or you, you know, you go like help build houses for Habitat.
This is one that I think
humanity.
Is really interesting. There are a couple companies out there that are beyond startups, but they've been integrated by the mainstream. Remember when I said you get to a point where natural organic demand has peaked and now the companies need to commit unnatural acts to get it going? So the travel industry, we're talking experiential and people want to do this and they want to do that. And that's fair and good. But there are only so many planes out there. And it turns out that actually there are only so much travel people can do, and it's kind of tapped out again.
I haven't gotten there yet. Andrew, I've not gotten there yet where I've maxed out on travel. I've had times where I'm really happy to be home, I'll tell you that. Like, I'm always happy to be home, let's face it.
How about this? The need to grow, that grow or die maxim, which drives American business, which drives business in general.
It's not necessarily a good thing.
Remember back in 2006 and 2007, we started seeing subprime loans for cars. You know, people who clearly had like no ability to repay that loan were getting loans.
Yeah, 72 months.
And we saw that blow up.
72-month auto loan, and you can roll the negative equity of your existing vehicle into that loan so that you'll never have positive equity. The only thing you can hope to do is that you're fortunate enough to get into an accident that totals the car and leaves you uninjured so the insurance company can pay it off on the gap insurance. But yeah, we're in a negative equity economy.
The prime reason for doing that was natural sales were slowing down. And you know, I come from a sales background, and this is what you do in a company is when your sales start to slow down, typically you go to the finance people and you say, lower your standards. You know, we got a number to hit. Give us incentives to get people in. And that's what you saw there. Let me tell you what they're doing in the travel industry. There's two companies out there, one called Affirm, another one called Uplift. They're doing layaway plans for airplane tickets. And they're charging, it's very simple. It's literally like an Aaron Rents furniture thing, you know, a racket where you sit there and you look at someone's credit rating and say, there's no way you could get a credit rating from anybody. We'll give it to you. And you'll do layaway, and we'll charge you anywhere up to 36% annual fees. And the person says, great, I now get to go to Florida and drive with that 82-year-old. Think about this. These are people who can't afford $1,000 plane tickets, and they're being put on layaway plans. Why? Well, JetBlue and others have partnered with these companies. They love it. They love it. Why? They don't carry any of the risk, but they get to fill the seats at a prime price. So again, I'm going to hold that out as this is what's happening right now is we've started to get to that point where we've got to start scraping the bottom of the barrel to keep the momentum going. You know, a company out there that's going to say you can't afford a $1,000 plane ticket, but we'll find a way to get you on that plane. Holy cow. You know, this isn't a car, right, where you can recover the asset. This isn't a car also where the dollar amount is huge. And yet, the bullish argument is, well, this is great. People who couldn't travel before are now traveling. I say, no, it's the opposite. They shouldn't be traveling. They can't afford it.
They shouldn't be owning houses. They shouldn't be owning cars. And, you know, we're in the negative equity economy. And if you look at it, you look at it, and this is exactly what happened in the real estate crash of 07, 08, 09. I was in Las Vegas, and atop every taxi cab in Las Vegas was a sign that said no money down, no interest, you know, interest only mortgage, and $693 a month for a brand new 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath townhouse. There was a sea of these taxis, and you know, it was a no money down deal. And my partner, I had one on each side. I said, looked at them both. I said, the real estate boom is over because they've run out of buyers. That's what really happened in the real estate bust.
There we go.
The greater fool. They couldn't find any more greater fools, and they couldn't make any more, and they were screwed. And then demand ended, and once demand peters out, what happens to your prices?
Yep, exactly. And here you're not talking hard assets. Mm-hmm. You're talking something soft, experiential. You're basically, you're financing experiences is what you're doing, but it's not like a, you know, something that's going to return in some kind of productive way. Now, obviously, bankers and everybody love this, right? It's yet another way to get that financing gravy train going at a time when rates are going up and they're getting squeezed elsewhere. But going back to retail, if you want to know what's really going on, this is exactly the kind of stuff that there's sort of the bearish bullish take. Mine's kind of bearish. Look, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel to keep the train going. That's never a good thing. That's a yellow / red light flashing. You're seeing that also with autos. Auto sales have peaked, and you're starting to notice that the subprime loans are going into default at rates higher than 2007. But right now, interest rates are low enough so that they can, you know, ignore this stuff right now. Now, what's going on? In the background, what we had is we had this tax cut, and that put money into people's pockets. A little bit of timing issue here. You know, people pretty much spent it in the fourth quarter. They pre-spent knowing that it was going to come in. You could see that in the surge in credit card debt, and at the same time, in parallel, a massive drop in savings. You get to the first quarter, that reverses. Suddenly, people are like, oh, my God, I got to pay my bills. So what happens? Credit card spending collapses. Literally, it goes negative month over month for the first time in a few years. Literally, just boom. People suddenly hit the brakes. Same thing. Savings rate goes back up. So you go through this period of spending, then household finance healing. We're now in April. The tax refunds have happened. And now people are saying, hey, not only have I gotten the benefit of this tax refund, but I've got incremental disposable money coming in thanks to this tax cut. I'm going to spend it. Well, where are they going to spend it? Well, they're not going to really spend it on things. Some will, but most of it's going to go to experiences. So if you want to know what's going on and you want to invest accordingly, let's start with the premise that there is more money out there now in the consumer's pockets. And you're going to have a false expectation. I would like to point out that I was one of the only economists out there on Bloomberg who accurately predicted a softer retail number. And how? Well, because I track spending on vices. I track that experiential short-term gratification stuff, spending on gambling, on booze, on drugs. And you know what it said? It said there's definitely a rebound happening, but it's shallower.
Well, I'll tell you what.
In the retail number.
I'll tell you what. As long as you're talking about drugs, when I was in L.A. a few weeks
what
ago.
What a segue. I want to hear this one.
All right. When I was in L.A. a few weeks ago, let me tell you, the marijuana business is booming. Incompetent idiots. It just reminds me of the debt buying business. It reminds me of the debt buying business in the early 2000s. Like, you had to be a moron not to get wealthy doing it. I'm just figuring out, like, I hate California. I don't want to live in Washington State or Nevada or Colorado. I really don't want to live in those places. How do I make the play on these, stocks? They're all fraudsters and they're all unproven. Trying to find Intel.
We can
talk Microsoft. Right?
I mean, we can talk cannabis. It's a great business. Let me just round out real quickly with the retail, and we could talk cannabis because I do the dirty work for my clients. I actually go all to right. these places and I actually do the investigation.
You sample the product too?
I do.
Oh my God. Oh, so you could be a bud tender if Moneyball Economics doesn't work out for you, huh?
A Batista. Yeah, I mean, bottom line.
A Batista, I haven't heard that one.
They have these great phrases. When you go in.
Bud tender. Hey, bud.
Actually, this is great stuff. I just want to tell people, retail is actually going to be stronger. Consumer spending is going to be stronger than these official numbers say.
Absolutely. No question.
And so, for example, I'm going to talk my book. I own two stocks, literally two. One is Disney. One is Amazon. Why? If there's money flowing in, retailers are going to benefit. And Amazon is the retailer, right? Disney, I can't believe Disney's not going up. I mean, they own the entire life cycle of a kid. Mm-hmm. And
they own Orlando, Florida. And that's a booming town. Like, you can't even believe every major highway in Orlando is being expanded as we speak, because they can't handle the influx of cars. I was there a couple months ago for a conference and I had to get from one side of Orlando to the other. Oh my God. It was a nightmare.
You've seen it.
Nightmare.
No, and they've got their movies now. What is it? Avengers is going to be the first $2 billion and the fastest $2 billion. I don't know what the Titanic did or whatever those silly, but they've got a massive movie. Anyway, spending. If you're going to spend it on experiences, that's Disney, right? Disneyland. Yeah. Now, people are beating them up with the ESPN ugly stick. Okay, that'll be resolved at some point. They're going to actually go after Netflix, and I think they're going to do well. Believe it or not, Disney is a high-tech company. I don't think people understand that, but they've been doing networking and high-tech for quite some time. Those are my two picks. Those are my two stocks. And I just think, things like that, or even Caesars. You know why? Sports betting is going to be legal. The only online sports betting entity out there is Caesars. There'll be a lot of challengers coming out. But Caesars, let's face it, at the end of the day, sports betting is all about putting tax dollars into the city and the state revenue, into the coffers. And they're going to go to the entity that can reliably deliver and track tax revenues. And that's an existing casino.
It's that will be a plus for them. I think they were in bankruptcy not too long ago, but in any event, the
online gambling is going to perk up with sports betting.
The other thing is here in Florida, we've got like a bunch of casinos, and when you look in the places, bad for Vegas, good for Atlantic City a little bit, really good for Florida, good for all of these like Mississippi, New Orleans. There's casinos all over the place now. This is a good thing for all of them. It's like, I don't really care about sports betting. You know, I could never figure out how to do it. I wasn't good at it, but I'll tell you that it's going to be a major plus for,
state. Mark Cuban invested in a company. So I'm in Silicon Valley. A lot of stuff is high tech. In the old days, you would bet on a win loss, baseball. Are they going to win or lose? Now they're able to track more data than you can imagine. They're tracking the spin of the ball. They're tracking all these pieces of information. And there's a company out there that's saying, fine, I'll collect every minutia, every little thing, and I'll make it available.
Yep.
Boom, there you go. Exactly. Cuban invested into it. So, anyways, retail, I think, is pretty solid going forward. It could look a little weak, but then it's going to be one of these things where you go, oh, gosh, everything's terrible. And then Disney's going to come out with their earnings and blow them out of the water. Well, how'd that happen? Or spending on – so you could do an ETF pick here, spending on consumer discretionary. Mm-hmm. People have money in their pockets. They're spending it, and the mainstream data points will not pick it up, but the corporate earnings will present it, and you will have that sudden surprise. And that's what you want as an investor if you're long.
Absolutely.
The cannabis market's interesting, though, by the way, and I say that because you're watching Cannabis Wave 2.0. In the beginning, you had hippies, stoners running this stuff. And, as it started to go legal, they were still running it. You'd bring in your duffel bag into the back room, do a handshake deal on the price.
Yeah.
I know. Not you personally.
Not me. It was a little informal. So
let me paint a picture for you. Now, professionals have come in. I think they're in between the hype and the reality. You got to recognize this is like the Florida orange crop. Mm-hmm. There is going to always be a demand, and it's consumed. And so you're always going to see people buy more. Now, there are two kinds of things that are here. One is we'll call it the martini effect. I want to indulge because I want to be mellow or whatever, right? I just, it's recreation. And I'm looking for a psychoactive type of experience. That's going to be out there. And there are going to be some problems and some advances, but whatever. It's out there like getting a beer, okay? Mm-hmm. In fact, this is interesting. In Colorado, in the cities of Denver and Boulder and all the major cities, they're seeing a drop in the consumption at bars of alcohol.
That's a good thing.
Well, what you're really seeing is substitute good. You're seeing people say, you know what? I'm going to Netflix and chill. I'm going to stay home. I'm going to get high because, you know what? It cost me less than $8. Mm-hmm. To get high versus an $8 pint of beer.
Hey, and you know what else? You're also seeing a reduction in the consumption of opioids to kill pain, and that is that's a big deal there.
That's an interesting segue. Let me take that. So now I mentioned there are two things in marijuana and in hemp. I should say let me be very technical and accurate here.
Okay,
hemp is a plant.
You're our expert.
Marijuana is loosely used to describe it. But let's talk hemp. Hemp has a lot of real-world things that we can leverage. When we talk about the chemicals in hemp, there are kind of two kinds that I want to differentiate. One is often called cannabinoids, CBDs. Yep. These are not the things that affect your brain. Then there's the thing, THC, which we know of, and that affects the brain. Well, the majority of hemp doesn't have THC in it. In fact, the Obama government legalized at the federal level CBD oils. Right. And this is interesting because you do not have a barrier. Well, here's the thing. CBD oils are the things that, if you've got arthritis in your joints or you're a little upset in your stomach, the anxiety stuff in your tummy, the things that, if you're a cancer patient and you don't have an appetite, when they say take, marijuana, it's not the THC. It's not the stuff that goes to your head that promotes whatever psychoactive thing, it's the cannabinoids that promote the hunger. So cancer patients will be stimulated to eat, which is good for them. Okay. So what's interesting is I mentioned that we're at wave 2.0. And what I mean is the professionals are starting to enter the picture. And the professionals have noticed that if you're going to deliver a product, it needs to have some kind of quality control and quality assurance. Mm-hmm. When you go out and buy marijuana at these places, you have no clue what you're getting. This isn't like buying a bottle of Bacardi.
This is different now, though, because they're all getting into it. There's THC content. Everything is tested.
That's wave 2.0. What you're seeing is literally the 1930s. We've gotten off prohibition.
Bathtub gin. No more bathtub
Consumer choice is coming in.
Yeah.
Consumer choice is saying, wait, now I no longer have to take whatever you have. I want that over there. Well, now they have to compete for business. And how do you do that? Brand loyalty is one way. So you're starting to see, again, I call it 2.0. You're starting to see the professionals come in and understand there's a lot to branding here. And branding is 100% based on the ability to consistently deliver a product at a known and anticipated level.
So I've got the idea. Andrew, I've got it. We're going to clean up here. We're opening up in LA. It's going to be called Moneyball Marijuana. What do you think?
There's got to be a better catchphrase. We got to do it. But yeah, Moneyball.
It's got alliteration. That's what you want in the title. Moneyball Marijuana.
I actually have a couple of business initiatives of my own that I'm pursuing because, again, this is a sudden – $10 billion, $20 billion. You know, when does the Mile High Stadium finally embrace that slogan in Colorado, right?
They have already.
You know, instead of Uber, it'll be Duber. We'll deliver pot to you, and it'll be a marijuana leaf app.
Going on.
You
know, that it's all happening.
It's all happening. So fast forward a little bit. Let's get to the real legitimate businesses. Your pharmacy, your big pharma, you know that there's something in that substance that is clearly leverageable in a legitimate way. Hey, if this stuff can boost appetite, let's come up with a pill that's based on it. Okay, well, now we have to test. And once we're done testing, we actually have to deliver it. Well, wait, that means we got to find a source that can scale and that has that quality assurance. So never mind consumers, right? Just forget consumers. That's a great market. But we're talking, what if Pfizer comes out with, you know, the equivalent of a Viagra? I'm not saying it does the same thing, but you got the equivalent of a high volume in demand pill that solves a problem, right? Mm. Well, they have to have a source of this chemical. And that's where you're seeing the chicken and the egg. They don't have a source. And at the same time, because of government and state regulations, it's hard for these producers to scale up. Well, on the one hand, you've got the background where they're really just ex-hippies and whatever. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm an ex-hippie, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, they're really just, you know, small business people who don't know better, who are used to selling dime bags. Mm-hmm. They're not used to the industrial scale demands that are out there. And so they haven't been able to step up, number one. And number two, state regulations kind of prevent it.
Yes. Yeah, well.
You're going to see this change very rapidly because big business is saying, wait a second. You know, like, let's face it. The you know, Trump is sitting there. He's a smart guy. He's in favor of gambling because he sees the upside. He's in favor of marijuana. He said, look, let's let it happen. Not because of states' rights, but it just makes sense.
Yeah, well, criminalizing. Anyway, we are out of time, Andrew, but Moneyball Marijuana. Go to one close by to a store near you.
BuzzCoin. We only take BuzzCoin.
BuzzCoin. I like that. MoneyballEconomics.com. Go check it out and see Andrew's perceived wisdom on markets and where it's really heading. Hey, check out our site, FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Sign up for our newsletter and send me an email. I'll answer it. I promise. I'm kind of backed up right now. You've been writing me hundreds of them. I'm probably a good 50, 60 behind. But by the weekend, I promise I'll be up to date. Everybody will be answered. But then there'll be a whole nother bumper crop of you guys out there. If you're listening on YouTube and you like the show, subscribe. You can hit that bell and it'll automatically notify you when there's a new show posted, which is fairly often. By the way, I'm kind of changing the operation a little bit. We are going to attempt to release two episodes per day, two shows per day, one at either 8 or 9 a.m. and the other at noontime. So you're going to start seeing more of that next week. Anyway, Andrew, thanks so much for being on. Always a pleasure to have you. And good luck on Moneyball Marijuana.
Thank you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.